Welcome to the Second Reading Podcast from the University of Texas at Austin.
The Republicans were in the Democratic Party because there was only one party.
So I tell people on a regular basis, there is still a land of opportunity in America. It's called Texas.
The problem is these departures from the Constitution, they have become the norm.
At what point must a female senator raise her hand or her voice to be recognized over the male colleagues in the room?
Welcome back to the Second Reading Podcast. I'm Jim Henson, director of the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas at Austin. Glad to be joined once again by Texas Politics Project Research Director Joshua Blank. Top of the late morning.
Yeah. Hey, thanks.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a second week of school here at University of Texas at Austin. Still going through the startup costs,
yeah.
I think, here.
Class-wise. One benefit of all of this is that, man, these weeks are flying by right now.
Yeah.
I feel like I look back and I'm like, oh, this week's almost done.
Yeah.
You know?
Week two almost on the books.
Yeah, so. Now it's moving.
So we're here on a Thursday morning recording for you. Hopefully you'll get your hands on this by late Thursday, which I don't have too much doubt about, given our crack crew here. This podcast is something along the lines of poll release week part two.
Yeah.
Although we're going to, you're so French.
Yeah.
it's poll release week part two, but with a fairly specific interest.
Right.
And, you know, I won't give you 30 seconds to guess that what we want to do is focus on the battery of questions that we did on an issue that has just had remarkable legs in Texas and nationally, and
mm-hmm.
that's data centers. And yes, we did a podcast on the subject about a month or so ago, I think, kind of our comeback podcast, maybe a little longer than that. Summer's already a little bit of a bog. But we were pretty excited, as these things go, excitement being a relative state in this context. But we added a set of questions in the August poll that shed some light on the different dimensions of people's attitudes on the subject. And I think we were both pretty pleased with what we got in terms of it really illustrating that there's a lot more to this issue right now. And it's a lot more complicated than just being able to say, hey, people hate data centers.
Yeah. I mean, if you listen to that podcast, you know, from whatever it was, some period ago, or some of the things that we've been saying. I mean, one of the things that's been interesting about this as an object of, you know, study for people like us who look at public opinion is that it really is evolving and developing over time. And we are seeing real change and real attitude formation where, you know, previously, you know, when you're asking people about AI and about data centers, it was clear that it was pretty abstract and obscure to people. And one of the things about this data center discussion in some ways is it's really created like a concrete, as we would call it, like an object to react to here. And I think, you know, it's really notable here. You know, we ask a news attention battery, you know, on every survey just to kind of see, to some extent, we say, you know, yeah, this is a big story. Maybe this is a big story to us. Maybe this is a big political story. And maybe it's not, you know? And that's like why we do that in some ways, is to get a sense of what's out there. And on that battery this time, you know, top of the list in terms of the issues that people say that they had heard a lot about in the news, AI, 54% of Texans said they heard a lot. Right below that, data centers, 44% said they'd heard a lot about that. Right below data centers, the Senate race.
Right.
So to the extent of, like, you know, for this audience, when you think about people who are, like, you know, really tuned into politics and really tuned into the election, it really is kind of notable here that, you know, the data center thing has, in terms of at least the attention space, really risen significantly.
Did it rise from June? My recollection is, interestingly enough, is that I
think it's been pretty consistent over the summer. I was thinking, talking about the relative piece of this relative to some of these other things, you know, and also the fact that AI has really kind of jumped up all of a sudden in all of this too, which I think is a byproduct or sort of connected, obviously, maybe. But to your point, though, you know, we were definitely interested in asking these questions about it. And one of the things that, you know, you're never sure about when you ask sort of a new battery and kind of. Certainly when you're trying to probe something that's kind of complicated is whether or not, one, people have real attitudes, and two, you know, whether or not those attitudes are, you know, let's just say informed or more, you know, speculative or kind of loosely held. And one of the ways we can kind of look at that and think about it is in some ways, like, how internally consistent are they? Do we see nuance that makes sense here? And one of the things about these batteries are you do see a lot of nuance that makes a lot of sense.
I think that's why we both we're pretty pleased with this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's funny how you're talking about the way this has unfolded over time, because, as you know, one of the things I've been thinking about as we've been covering mm-hmm. is, like, did we wait a little too long to probe this? Right. And that's almost a philosophical question rather than it can't be an empirical question, because we did wait, and nobody, to my knowledge, there's no public data on it anyway.
Right.
But, you know, what would those salience numbers have looked like? And I don't mean we should have been mystics and been asking about it 2 years ago, but we kind of kicked it around in February and April. Mm-hmm. And we're wondering whether it was ripe yet or not. And I'm wondering what we would have uncovered if we had a little bit trend out. We don't know.
Yeah.
You know, but regardless of what that would have looked like, we have arrived at a point where people have a lot of well-formed attitudes on a lot of dimensions about this. Is, I think, one of the first cut takeaway from this. Certainly, I think we both felt that way when we first looked mm-hmm. at the data. Like, oh, wow, that's pretty interesting, as we mentioned last week, I think. So talk a little bit about the structure of this question so that we can set it up, and we'll try to go over as quickly as possible what we got. Mm-hmm. Again, all of that at texaspolitics.utexas.edu. So let's lay out the basic outlines of the question.
Right. We're going to go a little bit deeper than that today, I think.
Yeah.
Okay, so, you know, we asked a couple different questions here, but the real, you know, sort of one of the workhorse batteries on this in this survey fell out of a question that asks a setup here, a stem that says, you know, in general, do you think that building more data centers will have a positive impact, negative impact, or no impact on each of the following? And then we asked about 13 different areas. You know, to sort of real quick just kind of lay out what that looked like, there were net positive, that means, you know, more positive than negative expectations, in 7 of the 13 areas we listed, which I think in and of itself, we could just stop and pause and say, hey, maybe that's not what people would have expected. Right.
It's not what I expected, I'll be perfectly honest.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's fair enough. I don't know. I don't know what can't remember what I expected. I would be honest if I did. So on things that, you know, where we see net positive responses, right? At the top of that, access to new technology. You know, half of Texans, 52%, expect a positive impact in terms of building more data centers when it comes to the access to new technologies. Local employment was next, 49% positive. U.S. economic competitiveness globally, 46% positive, only 21% negative. Local government tax revenue, 42% positive. The U.S. economy, 42% positive. The Texas economy, 42% positive. U.S. national security, 36% positive. Now, there is a pretty good amount of variance there, right? When we say, like, access to new technologies, pretty direct impact. 52% say more data centers will create a positive impact. 17% say negative impact. When we talk, go to, like, the U.S. economy, 42% positive, 35% negative. 42% positive on the Texas economy, right. 36%. So there is a lot of variance even within these.
Only one got a clear majority.
Right.
The rest in that category were pluralities, but again, still net positive.
Right. And I think in general, I think what I take from the net positives is, you know, at the broader level, you know, at the structural level, there's clearly a sense that there's a reason to do this.
Right.
You know, now on the negative side, I mean, just, you know, to preview just for 1 second, I mean, it does remind me of the all politics is local kind of saw, right? So I'm going to go up in terms of negativity here. So in terms of net negative views, you know, the local economy where you live, 39% said, it's going to have a negative impact. The reliability, now it really jumps after this. The reliability of the electric grid, 56% think negative impact there. 55% expect a negative impact on people's quality of life nearby these data centers. 56% expect a negative impact on local energy bills, 57% on the reliability of the water supply, and 61% on the natural environment.
And we'll come back to that. We're going to play some media here. So you'll get a recap of some of this in some ways in a different context as we go on. And it's also, I gave you the link. If that was...
Yeah, it's a lot.
If you blurred out on the numbers there over time, there's a list.
But the groupings make sense, right? In the macro level, you see sort of this, you know, clear positive reaction. I thought, you know, what was really interesting, you know, U.S. global economic competitiveness, 46 positive, 21 negative. I mean, there's a sense here that, look, this is that discussion that's going on here about, I would just say, you know, about China in the context of competitiveness here and all that kind of those pieces are there. But when it comes down to some of these more local things, energy bills, you know, electric grid reliability, water supply.
Yeah. I mean, I would think, you know, two things about that. One, you know, is that there's kind of a macro level positive read of this mm-hmm. that people seem fairly clear about. Now, we should say that on some of the numbers lower on that positive list, some of the no opinions ticked up a little bit more.
A little bit, but they weren't as high as you might have thought. I mean, you know, it seems like in most cases, you know, no more than about 1 in 5 voters.
Well, that's yeah. kind of the peak.
Yeah, right.
And both of those are the international dimensions. You get a little bit, you know, less clear attitudinal structure, and just a little bit, as you say. But I think as we're parsing this, that the two with the highest no opinions are U.S. economic competitiveness globally, U.S. national security.
Yeah.
And that tells us a little something, and that's familiar to us.
Yeah, I think that's
right. And familiar to most people that's listening as we go into an election, that the global setting and the foreign policy issues tend to be a little less salient to people, and they tend to have a little less information and fewer well-formed attitudes.
Yeah, as we should expect.
And then on the net negative piece, the other thing that really stuck out to me of those issues you mentioned, a couple that have been one of which is front and center has been front and center to some degree, but at least has never gone away from Texans' consciousness, and that's the worries about the reliability of the grid.
Yeah.
And that was one of the largest net negative gaps, right? And that was 23 positive, 56 negative. So a pretty big net negative, you know, sort of underwater. The one that was most competitive with that was the reliability of the water supply, also a really big focal issue in Texas.
Yeah.
Now, we talk about water a lot, that water is kind of always out there as an issue.
Yeah.
It's rarely at the top of people's list,
yeah.
But it's also something that people are clearly worried about, and that some of our other measures, even though the legislature has done a lot, the public reception has not always been as positive probably as they might hope. And we've talked about that. It's a long-term issue. It's hard for people to...
Well, and also...
It's complicated. You know, a lot of things about it. We shouldn't expect a ton of attitudinal sophistication, but it is there.
Yeah, well, and it's one of those issues that has such a massive asymmetry where, you know, you don't, every time you turn the water on and it works,
right,
you don't like add to your well of positive feelings about the water supply, but the one time it doesn't work, it's a huge problem and you remember it and it's a big deal. And same thing with electricity, you know, so it's one of the asymmetry there is so big that it's just one of those things, you know, I almost think like political leaders, regardless of party, anyone who's in power is almost always a little bit at a deficit here because, you know, the bad almost inherently outweighs the good.
Right. I mean, you know, the other thing that's interesting about these two is that there is a little bit of a split here between the more positively inflected results related to local economic factors.
Mm-hmm.
So the net positive list also includes local employment,
mm-hmm.
nearly 49% positive.
Yep.
And you mentioned local to government tax revenue, 42% positive. But in the net negative list, the local economy where you live is not one of the more extreme net negatives, but it is, you know, -6, you know, -6 net negative, right?
Right.
So 33 positive, 39 negative. So there is this interesting split between how people are perceiving the local economic impact, which has been a point of contention and will continue to be a point of contention in terms of what disputes over what that impact really is. You know, how much employment is there short term versus long term,
Et
cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And if you drive around Texas right now and, you know, and I get the pleasure of driving between many of Texas's large urban centers these days, you know, one of the things that you notice is the sort of pro data center at, you know, billboards, you know, outside some of the major areas. And one of the things that, I mean, it's sort of consistent, hard not to notice is, you know, I mean, the one that I remember, and I don't know who paid for it, I'm not trying to promote anything, but it was, you know, there's a picture of the firefighter and says, data centers paid his salary.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's a really, you know, it's really linking up to this idea of like local government revenue, public safety, right? And also, you know, and just in general, in terms of public servants, firefighters are like kind of unimpeachable, you know, so it's pretty easy.
Yeah. You good know, calendars too.
Great calendars.
Now, whatever the subtleties of all of this, and we'll continue to mine them, but let's take a slight, it's not really a detour, but maybe widen the aperture or maybe narrow the aperture, change the aperture. Whatever the subtleties here, the overall reviews of how this has been handled by the state's leadership, is shows problems since it's sort of absolutely and relatively in the negative range of people's evaluations of what of how the state leadership is handling issues, right?
Yeah. So, you know, we asked about a list, I think about 13 or so issue areas, and essentially whether or not voters approve or disapprove, again, of how state leaders and the legislature have handled these. And when it comes to data centers, overall, 24% of Texans said they approved, 45% said they disapproved. Not surprising, you know, partisan splits, you know, 8 approved, 69 disapproved for Democrats, for independents, 845. For Republicans, 43-26. So that's something.
Net positive, but
not overwhelmingly.
Not cheering.
No, yeah. And look, and the thing is, these are all relative to what, you know. And I think right. Part of the thing is you look on the list of all those issues, and what you see is that Texans' assessment of the state, you know, the state's handling of data centers is third from the bottom, just above housing and THC. But honestly, this is sort of an interesting thing to kind of maybe pivot to think about the campaign, just below healthcare and inflation and prices.
Right.
And so, you know,
but all of those are in net negative territory.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, this looks like, I mean, I say it looks a lot like this, you know, voters' views of the state's handling of basically inflation and healthcare. It's just that, you know, views of inflation and healthcare are a little bit more negative. And so, you know, I think one of the questions, we maybe come back to this, and I think I'm getting this question a lot and trying to sort of think about it, and I think we probably think about it pretty similarly, but, you know, do we think of data centers, I mean, I could, to simplify it with this data, to say, do we think of data centers maybe as falling more into sort of the THC kind of housing issue area, or maybe more up in like the healthcare cost of living issue, like space for the
campaigns? In other words, two places really, if you're an incumbent, you don't really want to be.
Yeah, you don't want to be.
You don't want to be having an answer for anything in any of those clusters.
No, it's not a great place to be.
Right. So, and the way I've been answering that question or trying to think it through is that the data center issue has its, and we see it, we've seen it in these particular impact responses we're getting. There's always been a question about the interaction between the quality of life, local sensibility, sorry, rural people, NIMBY kind of dimension to this, and the direct economic impact of this. And I think there's just enough overlap that there's a lot of flexibility, and we're seeing that from Democratic candidates from James Tallarico in the Senate race on down.
Yeah, I think that's right.
I mean, I think that's, and we've talked about that a little bit, I think.
And what that speaks to here is that speaks to like the real challenge of this issue, but the challenge of this issue is much greater for Republicans.
Yeah, they own it and they're playing, and as those numbers show, they're playing defense incumbent.
Well, and actually, as you look at the data, what you see is it's even more complicated than it looks. So, I mean, we focused a lot on, you know, obviously the geographic elements of this, and you can still see that when we look at those impacts in these different areas. You know, for example, in the urban environments, you know, we can look at the, let's just for simplicity's sake, more or less, I'll jump around a little bit, but if we look at the net ratings, you know, positive versus negative, you know, in the urban areas, you know, the net negative rating never gets below negative 24. So worse than negative 24 points, right? In the suburban and rural areas, it's regularly, you know, almost negative 50. And what that really translates to put it a different way, is in the rural areas, in the biggest issue areas we're talking about, the reliability of the water supply, the reliability of the electric grid, local energy bills, and the natural environment, about 50% of rural respondents expect a negative impact. Interestingly enough, in the suburban areas, and I think this is kind of notable, it's closer to 2/3 in all of those.
Right. We foreshadowed that last time. And I think that is one of the big, if not the biggest takeaway from the tabs in this battery. Yeah, it seems to me is that, you know, there's a, you know, people are emphasizing, I think, because it makes for trying to be nice to my friends in the press, but it makes for a pretty easy narrative by mid to late summer to say, you know, rural people are on the rampage. Yeah. This is where the complaints
backlash
are coming from. And we, and you know, I've contributed to that. The rural vote is an important, small, but important increment for Republicans, all of that, which we've talked about. And we kind of lost the degree to which, and it wasn't as apparent in the early polling to cut ourselves a little bit of slack. But now what we're really seeing is that this is spreading to the suburbs, much larger slice of the electorate. I mean, we're not talking about
20.
An increment here. I mean, the increments we're talking about are larger. I mean, definitionally, we're talking about another increment, but it's a pretty big increment.
No, and the thing is like, you know, we've talked a lot about, you know, rural voters and sort of and just rural Texans in the sense of place. But look, you know, to the extent that rural Texans have moved or decided to remain or live in these areas partially for, I like to put it a little bit differently, which is to say nobody moved out to these rural areas because they were waiting for the economic development to start. Like that's not, you know, right. For big industry to come in. Like, and that's, but also, I mean, I think it's important to remember, like most people who move to the suburbs are more likely to even be NIMBYer than anybody else because they're also looking for some kind of stability for various reasons, right? So these are big changes. I think the complexity of this, you know, this goes a little bit deeper than what's available just like on the website and in the tabs. We're going to cut a little bit deeper. But the political complexity of this is even kind of, it's more of a cluster F than it even looks like on the surface in some ways. And I just, you know, want to dive into that a little bit. So one, you know, we've talked before about how, you know, the president has essentially brushed back Abbott a little bit on Abbott's efforts so far to kind of rein in this issue a bit. I think I'll put it that way.
Yeah, well, as is typically the case, just think most people are probably familiar. The president has gone back and forth on this a little bit. He brushed back Abbott pretty in Texas pretty directly a couple of weeks ago. And then there was a brief comment, and I think these last couple of comments I have in mind probably came in the same messaging, which was people can do what they want.
Right.
I'm not, it's cool.
I'm not taking a position here.
I'm not gonna punish anybody for this essentially. But you are going to be an underdeveloped backwards community. And I do think that in a phrase that has been now quoted, I mean, you know, let data centers reign or let data reign is what I think. And that's R-E-I-G-N.
Yeah.
And so the pitches have been all over the zone to follow the brush.
So what is the impact?
But it's
that?
A problem.
Yeah, it's a problem. So what does that mean? Let me be specific about where the problem is. So, you know, we asked a very simple question, you know, do you support or oppose the construction of a data center basically in your community, right? And what we see is, you know, we asked this question in June and we asked it in August. Between June and August, the overall results barely budged at all, okay? So as of August, 30% were in support, 57% were opposed. That's pretty much unchanged from June. Among Republicans overall, the numbers are largely unchanged. A little bit more in favor of data centers. It went from 42 support, 44 opposed in June to 45, 43 in August. However, if you look at just those people who approve of Donald Trump's job performance, it went from 44, 41 to 51, 37. And if you look at just those Texans with a favorable view of the MAGA movement, it went from 45, 39 to 51, 37. So that's not
what are those last two again? Give us
51-37 for both.
But the movement.
Oh, the movement for the MAGA favorable voters from June to August was from 45 support, 39 opposed to 51 support, 37 opposed. So that's plus six to plus 14, right?
As we're talking about increments, you know that.
Yeah. And so just to say out loud, I mean, look, if you're the president and you're the president's team and you have, let's say, a developed or informed position on data centers that pushes you for various reasons towards encouraging data center development in America, asking questions about that, you might be looking at these data at a higher level with more of it and say, hey, you know what? This is working and we're moving it. Now, the problem is, and the challenge here, is when you look just among Republican voters, we've already been talking about some of these groups, talking about urban, suburban, rural, right? And let's just talk about the August numbers to make it simple.
Sure.
So we're just talking about Republicans right now. Republicans who say they live in an urban environment, 61-28 support oppose the construction of data centers. Suburbs, 41 support, 44 oppose. Rural, 34 support, 57 oppose. Yikes. That's not great. That's not what you want to see on any issue. Similarly, age, under 30, Republicans, 79-14 support oppose. So that's like slam dunk as it gets.
Right. And we should say that part of a general kind of pattern that we're seeing in terms of the relationship between younger people being more positively disposed towards technology. We see it in the AI numbers. We see it in the data centers.
Absolutely. I think, but what's interesting about this is a good example for, you know, you budding social scientists out there about, you know, the fact that these things are kind of working together. And to say it's one or the other is a little bit unclear when you see numbers like this, where the Republican numbers are so overwhelming in that group, it might actually be, there might be more going on here, is just to leave it at that. So again, under 30, 79% support construction of data centers, 30 to 44, it's 58 support, 33 oppose, 45 to 64, it flips, 34 support, 51 oppose, 65 plus, 31 support, 55 oppose. Maybe even most surprisingly and troublingly, maybe for Republicans, is Men, 56% support the construction of data centers in their communities, 35% oppose. Women, it's the opposite. 32% support, 52% oppose.
And that's all women.
That's all women. Those Republicans. These are Republicans. So we're only talking about Republicans.
Clarify, those are all Republicans you were just talking
about. So that's a real, I'll say this. What this sounds like, if we were just to take a step, you know, to change our aperture, right? Let's just take a step back. You know, it's like, what does this sound? It sounds like an issue that you don't want to be talking about at all, actually. Right. You know, I mean, if you're a Republican in some ways, it'd be great not to have to deal with this.
Well, but I think it's almost even worse than that because you don't want to be talking about it. But the other numbers we've talked about in terms of the salience and the prevalence of formed attitudes, you have to.
You have to, yeah.
You have to say something even if it's just a skillful step to pivot. Right. So let's talk a little bit about what this messaging looks like. And we've got an excerpt to play for you in a second. So what this is a 30-second spot produced by a group called the Infrastructure Alliance of Texas, about which I haven't been able to find much out. They've got a website. Brad Johnson posted this on X 2 days after our poll came out on the 25th. And just to be clear, I'm not saying this was triggered by our poll, even though we're about to do this. This exegesis, they probably did their own polling, but it does make me feel like our polling is on target. So let's roll that clip, and then we'll decompose some of this messaging, which speaks to this.
Choose between protecting what matters and building what's next. We can do both. Data centers will power America's future, driving innovation and our ability to compete, creating thousands of jobs and generating millions for local communities. Governor Abbott has a plan to protect our water, strengthen our electric grid, make companies pay their own way, and invest in our communities. Building tomorrow while protecting what matters. Call Governor Abbott and thank him for putting Texas first.
Okay, now, that's a very rich 30 seconds. And we'll try to make this video available. If nothing else, the video won't download because I'm not paying for X. But we'll figure out a way to push this video out to the website when this is posted. So you can go back to texaspolitics.utexas.edu because the visuals that are in this video are also the visual grammar of this is really in line with what we're about to talk about. So it's really pretty amazing if you decompose this line by line in a way. It's kind of amazing how this slots into the public opinion patterns that we've seen and what buttons are being pushed here and even in what sequence. So the main message, Texas shouldn't choose between protecting what matters and building what's next, acknowledges trade-offs right there at the top. We're not trying to tell you this is all good.
Yeah.
We're just telling you there are trade-offs and we can manage them. And then the touch points in the first 15 seconds talks about how data centers will power America's future, will drive innovation, increase America's ability to compete, create thousands of jobs, and provide millions for local communities. Now, without going back over all the numbers yet again, every one of those components matches up with the net positive responses in our expected impact components.
Right.
Now, almost exactly halfway the video, through the clip, it pivots to, and here's Governor Abbott's plan. Governor Abbott's plan, and there's a bullet list of these four items in the plan that plays on the screen, is protect our water, strengthen our electric grid, invest in communities, make companies pay. Now, protect our water, strengthen our grid, invest in communities, map directly onto those expected net negative impact list items. And the signal is Governor Abbott is doing something about this.
Right.
The making companies pay is also very interesting. It's the last thing you'll notice. He's going to make companies pay anyway.
Yeah.
You know, but it definitely speaks at a broader level to the way that Democratic candidates and critics of the governor have been playing this issue as, you know, these data centers are a product of Republicans in the state cozying up to these big corporations.
Sweetheart.
Speaks to our political leadership corruption and it kind of items that we see pop up among Democrats and independents in our most important problem items. And that could even be tied to the local economy, quality of life, too, if you really want to say it's, you know, we're going to make the companies pay, not you.
Yeah. I'd say also, you know, that's one of those pieces where one of the things that we've identified, you know, in polling, certainly in recent years, is a certain degradation in, you know, sort of Republican positive feelings towards all business, right? Mm-hmm. And we see that, you know, we know that there's distinction between what kind of businesses we're talking about, local businesses versus national and international businesses. And we also know from various, you know, polling that we've done and various—
And that we're seeing nationally.
Yeah, we're seeing nationally. And all, but also even that, you know, tech companies in and of themselves are kind of a negative object in a lot of these instances. And you may say, well, you know, why is that per se? And it's like, it's well, remember, there's been a lot of attacks on anti-conservative efforts by, you know, big, quote unquote, big tech and things like that. And so this has been an active space. And so it's not like, you know, I think one of the questions I've been getting, you know, a lot recently is sort of, does this represent like a pivot for Greg Abbott or something, you know, his orientation towards business? And my attitude is like, the nice version of my attitude in response to that question is like, well, you know, if you've been paying attention for a while, you would notice that this has been an evolving relationship. I mean, to the extent that, you know, the notion of a Republican Party that's just pro-business, pro-economic development all the time, no questions asked. Well, this is like a really salient and kind of very newsy version of that story for all the reasons that we're kind of talking about here because of, you know, various things. It's also the case that, you know, we do have these negative attitudes towards tech companies. I mean, you know, the legislature has tried to rein in technology companies at various points in time. You know, we talked about, and I think you'll remember some more, you know, a couple of years back, we talked about, you know, the legislative, you know, legislative committees dragging in, you know, BlackRock to talk about their ESG policies and their DEI policies. And so this is all, you know, and this goes back even further to Black Lives Matter and Me Too and sort of the corporate reaction to that and the counter reaction to that. And so this is all to say, you know, I think it's really easy to sort of, I'm just going to be a blunt, you know, dumb it down and sort of say, well, Abbott's now, I guess he's pivoting or now he's being a hit. I was like, well, no, because there's nuance here.
Right.
There's nuance in the public opinion. There's some nuance in the public response. And I think, you know, to, you know, I mean, it's my favorite thing is like, to be fair, there's some truth in all this, right? I mean, just to say in the public attitudes, even in what Abbott's trying to do here, which is, you know, yeah, we do want data centers. I mean, at some point, like, I mean, I think we can all, we want them somewhere, preferably like on the moon, I guess, but like, we want them. We need them in some way, shape, or form. But how you do it obviously matters.
Right. And I think the way I would summarize that is that there's, as all this relates to this, how does the public think? How does the media think about the relationship between Greg Abbott, Republican Party of Texas, and this question of, well, is this a signal about a new populist moment or something like this? There are two real good kind of teachable, and that sounds a little more condescending. I'm saying teachable moment because we're probably going to do some stuff
we're gonna do some teaching.
In class. Yeah, I'm going to have to write some stuff about teaching about this next week in our class. But there's also it's a teachable moment in multiple ways. The ways that you're talking about, which I think is more challenging, to be fair.
Yeah.
And I think it's more, you know, I think it's even challenging to people that are professional researchers. There have been, you know, plenty of specific academic debates about the depth of understanding of business and economic actors in politics and the translation of, you know, intersectoral conflict mapped onto party coalitions, for example.
Nice.
And that, and policy development and, and all that's, and that, you know, when I put it that way, it sounds as boring as possible, but it's actually very interesting stuff when you look historically and you can look at, some people look at that history of party systems, for example, through that lens.
Yeah.
So there's that piece of understanding that business is not a unified actor.
Right.
A lot of different directions around it. But also the fact it really underlines something that we have been hitting, I think, intermittently, and that is just the straight, more broadly speaking, the coalitional pressures that each party is facing and how this provides particular challenges for the Republican Party, whether you're looking at rural voters versus even among the electorate, more old-style conservatives who are probably the kind that are have been pretty quick to say, oh, come on.
Yeah.
You know, this is private enterprise. People are just bitching and being NIMBYs. And,
yeah.
You know, it's not like we're not going to build data centers, which I think there's a pretty good kernel of truth in that.
I think so.
But whether that's accurate or not, that's the coalitional pressures we're talking about. But those coalitional, those two points of illumination in this, to me, actually overlap in very interesting ways.
Yeah. Right?
Because Abbott and the Republicans in state government, absolutely, in this moment, mm-hmm. in the middle of elections, and I think we talked about this some last week, sorry if this were better, but you know, this is going to be a moment where this is going to get maximum response because of the electoral environment that we're talking about.
Yeah.
Right. Republican candidates cannot ignore this.
Yeah. And if anything, you know, taking, you know, asking about it again and taking a deeper look at the data, you know, probably makes me more willing to consider this as a bigger issue going forward than mm-hmm. I had previously.
Yeah.
And part of it is
in and of itself.
Right. I think, you know, part of it is I still hold to the fact that, you know, voters are focused on the economy. That is the main thing. I mean, the fact that, you know, Democrats are going to keep talking about affordability, talk about cost of living. Republicans are going to try their best to enter that conversation on favorable terrains. We saw some of that this week with Abbott talking about, you know, basically homeowners insurance and things like that. Yeah. So that's going to go on. But I think, you know, but previously, you know, prior to getting this new set of data, it really did feel to me like a coalition management issue, right? That like this was a problem in rural communities that vote overwhelmingly Republican and they need a response to this because it's a tough election year and they need those margins. Looking at this data, you know, if this were a virus, it looks like it's starting to spill out of control a little bit, yeah. You know, and that's the thing is like if it's becoming more salient in suburban communities where we know that political competition is hot, right? And where costs and sort of just, you know, quality of life issues are really, you know, front and center for people, you know, that is something that you, you know, again, for Republicans, you really want to contain. And I think for Democrats, that is why you're going to see this continued effort to tie this to the broader question of costs, broader question of, you know, fairness in the economy, and questions, of course, of state stewardship and state leadership, both
right.
in terms of natural resources, but also in terms of just infrastructure quality, right? And these are all things that, you know, it's, you know, as I say, it's easy to imagine how Democrats would go on offense, and all this data shows how hard it is to play defense here.
Yeah, I think that's right. But the other thing that I also see in here,
yeah,
is that, I mean, I absolutely agree with that. That
I still think it's a secondary issue.
That broadly speaking, it's a problem.
Yeah.
if you're a Republican yeah. incumbent.
Yeah.
Right. Kind of no two ways about that. But the other element of here that I'm really fascinated by, mm-hmm. and which I think the ad we're looking at, mm-hmm. we listened to, really crystallizes, is that both the public opinion patterns and the emerging response mm-hmm. from both in the campaign sphere and in among the economic corporate stakeholders and at the overlap, which is what this ad was underlining, I think in conjunction with the public opinion numbers, very telegraphic of where I think this is going.
Yeah. Well,
or, you know, and again, I don't know where it's going to wind up, but this framing is going to be with a slightly, you know, maybe even inverted, I don't know, is telegraphing what the position is going to be when we get into the more direct stakeholder negotiations where the interest groups and probably the, I don't know this, but I would suspect at least some of the funders of the Infrastructure Alliance mm-hmm. of Texas are going to have more of a direct say in the policymaking and the new rulemaking and the new and the regulatory modifications that are coming down the pike. We are going to hear these arguments a lot, and we're going to hear them in the public forum as the interested actors, with the cooperation of elected officials, mm-hmm. begin to try to essentially sell it.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting, and I think, and let me, I want to connect to that and then just back up once, you know, when they try to sell, and this is a classic, you know, this is going back to the teaching moment again, this is like a classic collective action problem where the interested organization, you know, the interested industry groups are going to organize obviously. They are going to mobilize. Yeah. They are going to be have professional advocates. They are going to be there, right? For the various, you know, sort of people in the communities who just don't want this in general, you know, it's, you know, you either get it or you don't. If you, you know, if you end up, you know, if the legislative solution ends up, you know, carving out areas that include yours where these won't be built, then you win whether you did anything or not. And that's sort of the challenge here. One side is going to be heavily resourced and organized. The other is going to sort of see what happens. Right. But that's why you got to go back a beat, I think, to why the election piece of this is so important in watching how this plays out. With both the Trump numbers, the Abbott messaging, and now the industry sort of, you know, let's just say promotion of similar messaging, right?
Yeah.
There's an effort going on amongst both the industry and some Republicans here to try to move public opinion, right? Trying to shift it along these very specific lines that they know exist. And I think the thing that, you know, is going to be interesting to watch where it goes,
right,
speaking of this over the next couple months, is, you know, how effective is that going to be? And on the one hand, you know, partisanship is a powerful drug. And if all of your best friend's friends are telling you that this is how you should be thinking about this issue, we know some people are going to just come along in that.
Right.
And that's,
well, but those MAGA numbers illustrate
that
you read earlier.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And there's a question, though. But at the same time, I would say, you know, again, as someone who's looked at a lot of public opinion over time, there is a question here about what the ceiling is on those efforts.
Yeah.
And the reason is because of just the nature of the discrepancy between the two groups of considerations, right? One is very abstract, long-term, big picture, systematic, right? The economy, global competitiveness, you know, whatever these new technologies are. One is very salient and very local and easy to understand, which is like, what am I paying for my electric bill? What am I paying for my water, right?
What about the grid, right?
You know?
Yeah.
And also, and at the end of the day, when all is said and done, regardless of where people land on all that stuff, nobody who today doesn't want a data center built next door to them is going to wake up tomorrow and say, you know what? Actually,
right,
I was wrong.
I agree with that, but that's why I think the two timeline arcs being different is so interesting.
Well, and it's helpful. I mean, this is the thing that I've been saying all along, too, is, you know, regardless of what you think about, you know, just to set aside the reality of the policy, you know, I'm putting quotes, policy proposals being put forward right now. You know, it's easy right now to say, yeah, these data centers, should they exist, are going to lower your energy bills. But it's going to take that next step to say, well, how does that work?
They've got to demonstrate they're doing something, right?
Right, but that's a long ways from now.
And that also is out of, you know, as our data frequently shows, that's after the election environment. Mm-hmm. And we can expect that some of the partisan fervor, not all of it by any means, will have cooled.
Yeah.
And look, I don't know if it's hats off to the governor's pollster, hats off to us. I don't, you know, hats off to everyone.
Yeah, we're all doing a good job here.
We're all very generous here. But what the governor is talking about and what he's pointing the legislature to in terms of saying that, you know, we need to induce... I'm going to use the term induce, not force, but we need to induce people building data centers, you know, to be, you know, to, you know, reuse their water.
Yeah.
Right.
Good
want
stewards.
Them to generate their own, you know, prior to the grid energy. I mean, they're speaking to what the concerns are.
Right.
And because there is a partisan difference and because there's going to be a lot of, and a lot more elite partisan messaging, there is going to be, I anticipate, based on this data, an openness among some of those people to hear these signals coming and say, at the very least, I mean, nobody anymore seems to want to say, hey, you did that, good job.
Right. No, that's not.
Right? We just don't see that anymore very much. But among Republicans, we will see some degree, I think, of, well, at least they're trying. They're trying to do something. And that may be enough to create the space to continue forward with data centers, which again is going to happen.
Yeah.
But in a way that turns down the temperature of the objections.
And I would say the flip side of that too is that, you know, the Democratic response, I don't think we should necessarily expect it to remain kind of uniform and oppositional as this unfolds. And that's gonna I mean, at some point, you know, the Democrats are in their own kind of difficult spot, which is, you know, there's a short term opportunism to being the anti data center party.
Right.
But also, you know, to maybe this wraps us up a little bit, you know, to the extent that the Republican Party orthodoxy has evolved in recent years to be less full-throatedly supportive of all business efforts in all times. Democrats have been noticing this, and they've been looking for opportunities to enter and find some of their, you know, find access to some of those resources that Republicans usually claimed. And so, you know, this is just to say, yeah, right now this makes sense for Democrats, but like, we'll see where their voters go. And also, you know, once we get to that next phase of this, I'm curious to see where some of these Democrats
land. There's some campaign finance contribution data to be drilled down in here, but I think it's really, you know, I had not really been thinking that much about the Democrats at the legislature, but that's also, it fits the argument or, you know, of what we're anticipating here to me to say exactly what you're saying, that once about the kind of territory in this campaign environment the Democrats almost have to stake out versus what we know about the realities of how the legislature operates. And, you know, it's not as if no Democrats get any money from the corporate, from corporate donors. Put it that way. And so that is also one of the reasons that the corporate stakeholders have an advantage when the discussion moves from the public forum of an election environment to the nominally public, but, you know, much more obscure domain of the policymaking process, the lawmaking process in the legislature. So, thanks, Josh, for being here.
Yeah, this was fun.
And for all the prep on this. Yeah, this was a good
fun
time.
For, fun
this
for
is
me.
One of the ways we have a good time.
This is great.
So thanks to all of you for being here. Thanks to our excellent support staff here in the development studio, audio department in the College of Liberal Arts here at UT Austin. We came in with last minute media and lots of stuff here. So we appreciate y'all bearing with us. Stay tuned. There's still a lot more to mine from this poll. I have no idea what we're doing next week, but we'll be doing something.
We'll do something.
So we'll be back next week with another Second Reading podcast. The Second Reading podcast is a production of the Texas Politics Project at the University of Texas at Austin.